searching podcasts for The Daily Perspective. Okay, The Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
Amen. It is Friday. The weekend is upon us. And this is The Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host. Hoping you are having a terrific Friday. However early or late it may be that you're hearing this podcast. It's good to have you along today. I appreciate you being there. I'm glad you're sharing it with your friends and spreading the love or the absurdity, as the case may be. Well, we are diving into a weekend here. I've got a stack of stories. I won't get to all of them. And hopefully we can this weekend unplug. I encourage you to do this every Friday. That when you hit the end of the week, you need to unplug. If at all possible, just unplug. Because you need the relief from all of the stress. Because the mainstream press and the leftists, the progressives, the liberals, are all generating a lot of, drama. They are drama queens, and they strive to suck everybody they can into their drama. So if you're anywhere within their orbit, you get sucked in. It's a terrible thing, but that's the way it is. So this weekend, do what you can to distance yourself from the drama by unplugging. And take it easy. But wait till the end of this podcast, at least. How are you doing today? I hope you are well. Hope you and your loved ones are doing well. And that life is treating you nicely. That you are looking forward to a good weekend. That hopefully you will have some time to yourself to ruminate on life and the things that matter, and bring some things into perspective. I find in my life that is the most beneficial time in life, because we tend to fill all of the quiet with noise. It's a good idea to unplug and to seek the quiet. I've said this before, but let me say it again. When we fill the silence with noise, we're distracting ourselves from what we really, really need to face. So spend some time this weekend in the quiet, if at all you can, just alone with your thoughts and deal with life. Just deal with it. If you think through things and reason through things in the quiet, you will come up with some observations and some insights, and you'll see the absurdity for what it is. I'll just leave that right there. Let's see, what do we got to look at today? Hopefully we'll get to everything I have in my list, but I never do. I just never do. So today, make sure you get the show notes. We'll make sure that the leftovers are in the show notes as well today. And that way you can see what I had stacked up, thinking, I might get to it. Because I will include it as bonus material down below the stories that actually did make it. Things on the docket today, we'll see what we get to. There's a report, a horrifying report coming from the UK about gender neutral restrooms. We'll take a look at that. Hopefully. Tucker Carlson. I don't know if you saw Megyn Kelly on Tucker Carlson the other night. I didn't talk about it yesterday because I actually didn't see it when it happened. I watched it on YouTube the following morning, watched it yesterday morning. And, my wife and I both watched it as we sipped our coffee, getting ready to head out into the world, and we had things to say about it. Hopefully we'll dig into that today. There's a gender studies professor who has something to say about obesity and black women. Yeah, a gender studies professor. By the way, this is the same genius who told us that time is racist a little while back. We'll dig into that. The Trumpster. Oh, I'm telling you, the Donald has blasted the Democrats, and I loved what he has to say. And we're going to start things off today with a little something about journalism. The state of journalism today. TV journalists these days, by the way, the story is coming to us from Newsbusters. If you don't check Newsbusters on a regular basis, let me encourage you to do so at newsbusters.org. Great material, good insights into what's actually happening, and they watch the media like a watchdog. TV journalists these days sound so similar to Democrats on impeachment that it's nearly impossible to tell them apart. Weeks before the impeachment inquiry was even introduced, talking heads were passing off Democratic talking points as objective information about the president's alleged wrongdoing. On this page is a video of some of the liberal media's greatest minds spouting DNC talking points. These journalists have not had their words taken out of context while attempting to summarize the Democrats' position. Whether or not they were intentionally regurgitating the words of Democrats, they did so without attributing their words to anyone. Now, I have the audio. I want to play the audio for you. It's about a minute and a half long, so just bear with it. It's repetitive, but that's the point. It's repetitive because they're repeating what the Democrats are saying. For the most part of this video, what you will hear is first a Democrat politician, followed by a member of the mainstream progressive press. First a Democrat, then a journalist. I put journalist in quotes. You can't see me air quoting. For the most part, there is one little compilation where there's a bunch of them jumbled together. But the vast majority of these, it's a politician and then a journalist.
The actions of the Trump presidency revealed the dishonorable fact of the president's betrayal of his oath of office.
The president has been exposed violating his oath of office.
The president of the United States has betrayed his oath of office.
Violations of his oath to the Constitution.
Unprecedented breach of the oath of office.
Betrayals of his oath of office.
The president has admitted enough. We have got enough information at this point.
He has already confirmed what he's done in broad daylight.
We've basically got a confession.
He's already confessed to this crime.
The president has already admitted.
The president admits he did it.
The White House and the State Department continue to orchestrate this massive cover-up.
We are watching a cover-up by the president of the United States.
They've been in the business of trying to cover up.
Implicated in a cover-up.
There's a cover-up.
The cover-up, the attempted cover-up.
To interfere with the Congress's ability to call before it relevant witnesses will be considered as evidence of obstruction.
Trump's strategy, it's pretty clear. Obstruct, deflect, confuse.
Obstructing justice, refusing to comply with the congressional inquiry.
It is obstruction of justice. It's bribery.
A lot of the committees have documented obstruction of justice.
All of this obstruction from the White House and from the president specifically.
He's using the abuse of power and every element of the presidency.
The heart of the abuse of power.
This gross abuse of power.
You could say it was an abuse of power.
There has been an abuse of power.
Abuse of power.
And that is an obviously impeachable abuse of power.
And there you have it. Repeating what they have been given by the DNC. The talking points recited over and over and over again. And it gets worse. On October 3rd, New York Times columnist Frank Bruni and Politico chief political correspondent Tim Alberta both recited language from a DNC press release, verbatim. On CNN Newsroom, Bruni and Alberta on the MSNBC 11th Hour each asserted that Vice President Pence's professed ignorance about the president's talks with Ukraine did not, quote, pass the smell test, end quote. Only a day after the DNC published a press release titled, Pence is an accomplice to Trump's abuse of power and his denials don't pass the smell test. And just after House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on October 4th alleged that the president had betrayed his oath of office, NBC political director Chuck Todd voiced the same accusation on the NBC Nightly News as his own personal point of view. Quote, what Trump has admitted to in the last 48 hours is essentially violations of his oath to the Constitution. End quote. Journalists also dutifully repeated Democrats' allegations of a cover-up by the Trump administration. For example, on the 4th of October, CNN's gray eminence Carl Bernstein assured the viewers of New Day, quote, let's be clear here. We're watching a cover-up. We're watching a cover-up by the President of the United States, end quote. Later that evening, NBC's Rachel Maddow sounded alarmingly similar to Adam Schiff when she theorized that, quote, the investigation into the cover-up might end up being a whole separate article of impeachment in terms of obstruction of justice, end quote. That latter charge, obstruction of justice, also received considerable mileage on CNN and MSNBC. On the October 6th edition of New Day on CNN, analyst April Ryan rattled off all of the above charges with the confidence of a Democratic operative. Quote, this is obstruction of justice, it's bribery, demeaning the oath of office, demeaning the office, end quote. Thanks to the lack of daylight between journalists and Democrats, most cable news broadcasts have begun to sound like de facto DNC press conferences. It's anybody's guess why Pelosi hasn't just hired somebody at CNN or MSNBC to do her public speaking for her. We keep hearing accusations that today's press is just the publicity arm of the Democrat National Committee. And stories like this back that up. We have, quote, journalists, end quote, who are just simply digesting what the Democrat National Committee tells them and then regurgitating it on the air for their viewers. And it's not just on the fringe, like on MSNBC. It's everywhere. Everywhere. It really is a sad state of affairs. We see these people on our televisions telling us things which appear to come from their own hearts and their own hard work at digging into the story, when in reality what it is just what they've been told to say. We know from stories in the past that there are memos issued from the DNC to network and cable news. We know right now that Project Veritas is releasing videos each day specifically about CNN and how their entire focus is on impeaching a sitting president. This is a news organization which once was the most trusted name in news. It stood head and shoulders above all others. People trusted CNN to tell them the truth, but no longer. Even employees at CNN are fed up. They don't like what's going on at CNN. They see themselves as being in the journalism business, and they want to do their jobs. But they're not allowed to do their jobs because they're being told what they will report on and what they won't report on. And right now, what they will report on is impeachment. It's all about impeachment. So, not so much in homes across America, but in airports across America, people are being subjected to one side of what's going on. If you didn't have conservative media, if you didn't have conservative radio talk shows, if you didn't have conservative podcasts like this one, then you would not know the other side of the story. You would have one side of the story. And you would be led to believe that our president, Donald Trump, is an evil, wicked, dishonest, law-breaking, disrespectful person who never should have been elected president. You would believe that America may have made a mistake. And that's exactly what the progressive politicians want you to believe. They want you to believe you blew it in 2016. They want you to believe you didn't know all the facts in 2016. They want you to believe some sort of shenanigans were going on and people were deprived of their vote in 2016. They want you to believe that there was racism and that black people in districts across the country were deprived of their vote. They couldn't vote. when that's not the truth. Not the truth at all. None of that is true. The truth is that for 8 years, the progressive left has been working hard, diligently, behind the scenes, in secret many times, to fundamentally transform the United States of America. And they were absolutely certain that they had everything in the bag, and they were going to keep on doing what they had been doing for 8 years with Hillary Clinton sitting in the Oval Office as their front person. Because Barack Hussein Obama really wasn't running the show. He was just there for the cameras to make the public appearances. And Hillary Clinton would have been the same. They would have fought to keep her sober and in the spotlight as much as possible. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Ah, the weekend is here. Come on, y'all. You gotta love it. Ah. I'm facing a weekend, at least a part of a weekend, without the wife. She's heading out of town. The last I heard, it's tonight, and then she'll be gone most of tomorrow, and then hopefully back tomorrow night. And I gotta be honest with you, when it comes to my defense, I was left unsupervised if I get in trouble. So I just want you to know that. If you hear of any kind of trouble on my end, I was left unsupervised. That's my defense, Your Honor. I got a bunch of stuff to do while she's gone anyway, so... The odds of me actually getting in trouble are pretty slim. And hopefully you have your stuff to do as well, and that you're going to have a great weekend, and that you keep yourself busy, and hopefully busy with loved ones, as I said last week. I can't overemphasize that, by the way. Let's see, is there any housekeeping? Yeah, coming up Monday, I'm back in the studio over for Dawson now, and I have to be there really, really soon after we wrap up recording at the 8 to 9 Central, the live feed. And that may mean, for you podcast listeners, it may mean that Monday's podcast may be delayed a little bit. It may come to you a bit later in the day than normal because I may not be able to finalize everything before it's time for me to hit the door, because it will take me a certain amount of time to get to the studio. And basically speaking, when I get through here and I say goodbye Monday, I will stop recording and shut down the live feed and get in the car and leave. And then I will come back sometime after lunch and wrap things up and upload the podcast. So Monday's podcast may be a little later than you're used to hearing it come. Okay. All right. Where are we now? Oh, yeah. It seems that it doesn't matter what President Trump does, the Democrats hate it, whatever it is. I mean, it's been said that Trump could actually find the cure for cancer, and the Democrats would scream, it's racist. So, and that at one time, that was parody. At one time, that was just humor. But the more we see them react to things, the more obvious it is. And it's in this situation in Syria and with Turkey and the Kurds. It's another one of those situations, because if you've been around and paying attention for a while, you understand that when George W. Bush got us involved over there, there were a lot of leftist voices who screamed. And there were a lot who never stopped screaming. They didn't stop screaming for the 8 years of the Obama administration, but we were still there. And the Obama administration, if I recall correctly, promised to get us out of there. There's no reason we should be involved in that. And there were so many people who said that. So many people on the left who screamed and yelled and jumped up and down and paraded and fought and protested. And now that Trump has actually done that very thing, is in the process of getting us out of that entanglement that's been going on for ages, the Democrats are just livid. It is amazing to see how passionately Democrats are suddenly supporting the idea of America, American empire, a worldwide presence of U.S. troops, with a focus on the Middle East. This is an article coming to us from PJ Media by Michael Vandergalian. For decades, Democrats said they opposed endless wars. But from the very moment Trump became president, the party's leaders have become more hawkish than George W. Bush, of all people. President Trump has noticed this too. He says, "I'm the only person who can fight for the safety of our troops and bring them home from the ridiculous and costly endless wars and be scorned." He said this on Twitter. He goes on to say, "Democrats always liked that position until I took it. Democrats always liked walls until I built them. You see what's happening here?" He actually said in his speech the other night, I think it was last night in Dallas, he said what he should have done with the wall was say, "There's no way we're ever going to build a wall." Then the Democrats would have built it. He's absolutely right. Democrats' hypocrisy is stunning to behold. I've never seen anything like it. And that's saying something. After all, politics is the art of hypocrisy. A politician who isn't a horrific opportunistic hypocrite has, sad to say, no chance of winning an election. But the level of hypocrisy on display by Democrats is shocking. Yes, even for politics. They are going on and on about how terrible it is that Trump is bringing the troops home. But this is exactly what they called for all those years ago when Bush 43 was president. In fact, they are still calling for it. Shortly after Trump's withdrawal from Syria was announced, both Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren criticized it while admitting that they too would bring the troops home as president. So why the anger with Trump? The explanation is simple. This is pure politics. Democrats don't care about the troops. They couldn't care less about ending endless wars. And they also couldn't care about supposed allies, who, by the way, are affiliated with a terrorist organization that has killed many thousands of Turkish security force members and civilians. No, the only thing Democrats care about is winning elections. Back when Bush was president, they thought that an anti-war stance would help them electorally. Now that Trump is president, they believe the opposite to be true. And so they've gone from peace-loving doves to war-loving hawks. It's disgusting and extremely hypocritical. But this is also the true nature of the Democrat Party. They are opportunists. The good news, the hypocrisy is so blatant right now that even the most disinterested voter can't help but see it. It's absolutely true what he has to say here. He's dead on. Right on. And it's interesting to watch. I haven't said an awful lot about this because this is a situation that needed to play out a bit. There are people on the right who are saying it was handled clumsily. There are people on the right who say they're on the right, who are arguing against it. But the point is, he made a promise. And the people embraced that promise. He promised to get us out of endless wars. He promised to not involve us in places where we had no business being. And the way things are playing out right now seems to be working in a positive direction, at least for now. But we've been involved in a situation for quite some time that a lot of Americans didn't want us involved with. For some, it was because they hated who got us involved there. But for others, it was because they looked at the bigger picture and said, you know, we can go in and do what we want, but as soon as we turn our backs, if we ever turn our backs, they're just going to do the same thing again. It's that way all over the Middle East. I don't know if you've noticed, but anytime we go in and establish any sense of order, as soon as we pull out, everything goes to hell in a handbasket again. Because there is a mentality that, for the most part, over most of the Middle East, runs everything. And that's the warlord mentality. It goes back to the Ottoman Empire, the Muslims, and Islamism. Conquer. Conquer everything. Once it's conquered, it's yours, and it's yours for eternity. It doesn't matter who's there at any other point in time after you've conquered it. It's still yours. That's called the caliphate. And that mentality, that land is yours regardless of who possesses it, is what keeps everything in turmoil in the Middle East. Because that warlord mentality says, I will destroy you because you are on what is mine. And if you do not leave and give it back to me, I will lay waste to everything and continue to slash and burn and murder and maim and rape and kill until it all belongs to me again. And that's the mentality, that warlord mentality. And the one shining beacon of sanity in the Middle East is Israel, which is why they are our friend and we are theirs, which is why Donald Trump established the embassy in Jerusalem where it is, which is why we step up and help them whenever possible. And it's also why the leftists, the progressives, hate Israel. As long as the warlord mentality is in control in the Middle East, everything will constantly be violence and bloodshed. There will be people with suicide vests wandering into schoolyards and churches and synagogues. There will be people with knives and guns. There will be people planting bombs. As long as that mentality is there, can we change it? No, we can't. We just need to be aware and defend our friends. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. It is the weekend almost. Just another work day, and we're off. It is a Friday edition of The Daily Perspective. We're recording October 18th, 2019. If you're late to the party, welcome. Oh, man. I was looking through things to talk about today. Hang on, let me get back over here. I got sidetracked. I don't know about you, but while I've actually got a web browser open and I'm looking at things, there are quite often sidebar ads. You know what I'm talking about. Ads on the sidebar that keep me distracted. I mean, and one of them, I'm always looking for a comfortable shoe, and I get distracted by ads for shoes that claim they're comfortable, really comfortable, revolutionary comfort, that sort of a thing. And generally speaking, I'll go look at them and I'm like, that's a car payment. What, are you crazy? And it just amazes me how much a pair of shoes, a comfortable pair of shoes costs nowadays. Just, I know it's just silly, but that's me because, and you know what it is? It's because, and I hate to say this, but it's because of the knee issues I've had for so long. I got to have something soft to walk on. Anyway, I mentioned earlier that there was one of the stories to talk about this morning was a gender studies professor who is talking about obesity in black women. And that this is the same person who told us not long ago that time, the concept of time and being on time, you know what I mean? Having respect for others by being to work on time and at appointments on time and to church on time and the like, that's racist. That's just racist because that concept of time is a white man's thing. That person, that same person, Brittany Cooper, professor of women's and gender studies at Rutgers University, said during an appearance on Black Women Own the Conversation on OWN last month, she said, criticism of obese black women is misdirected. Now, before I go any farther, have you ever criticized an obese black woman? 100% no. No, nobody has. Have you ever heard of anyone criticizing obese black women? No, I never have either. Never. Never heard anybody do it. Haven't heard of it happening. But because it's so vitally important to create victimhood wherever possible when we're dealing with the people on the left, we have to assume that black women who are obese are somehow victims. It's not your fault. You're a victim. She says, I hate when people talk about black women being obese. I hate it because it becomes a way to blame us for a set of conditions that we didn't create. By the way, this happened. It was on Oprah Winfrey's OWN network. A set of conditions we didn't create. Conditions you didn't create, do you mean to say you didn't overeat and sit on your hiney instead of exercising and pushing away from the table? You're saying somebody forced you to do that? Somebody created a condition, a set of conditions, which forced you to keep pounding food down your pie hole and sitting on your backside. That's the condition. Was created by somebody else. Oh, okay. She goes on to say, we're living in the Trump era, and look, those policies kill our people. You can't get access to good health care, good insurance. Trump policies kill people? You have access to health care. Remember, the other day I was talking about somebody my wife knows who's right now in the hospital. She has no insurance, but they're taking care of her. She'll work out a payment plan. Things will work out. We have access to health care. You don't need insurance to push back from the table and walk around the block. Ugh. According to Cooper, who cited the expertise of public health practitioners, racism literally leads to diets being less effective for black women. Quote, it's literally that racism that you're experiencing and the struggle to make ends meet actually means the diet don't work for you the same. Exactly how does racism literally make diets less effective for black women? How does racism make it harder to eat less and harder to move more? Isn't that something that has to do with your personal private life? Nobody's telling you to exercise at the back of the bus. Excuse me. Nobody's telling you you have to sit in that section where we're going to overfeed you in our restaurant. How does racism make diets less effective for black women? How? This is the insanity you are supposed to accept as fact. However, Cooper told Campus Reform that she was not, in fact, making an argument about Trump administration policies and weight. Saying, Dr. Arlene Geronimus's research from the 90s argues pretty convincingly that black women have physiological stress responses to racial stimuli and thus affects our long-term health. That's what she tells a news outlet. I was citing this body of work and the president's status as a racially polarizing figure that contributes to issues of racial stress and people of color. The only reason that the president is a racially polarizing figure is because race baiters like Al Sharpton and other leftist liars have made him polarizing. They've lied about him to anyone who will believe whatever they say and convince them that he is a racist. That is why people think he's racially polarizing. There is no other reason. In fact, there is no evidence to hold the claim up. None. Anything they will tell you is evidence is misrepresentation. It goes back to the good people on both sides in Charlottesville argument, which we have debunked multiple times here. So, your argument doesn't hold water at all. Now, she referred to Geronimus. Geronimus is a public health researcher who also serves as a professor of health behavior and health education at the University of Michigan. Much of Geronimus's scholarly work, like that of Cooper, is tinged with the language of social justice. Ah-ha-ha! In an interview last year with NPR's Code Switch, a podcast dedicated to examining issues of race and identity, Geronimus expounded on her theory of weathering. Weathering, a term invented by Geronimus, describes the ways that marginalized people and their communities coped with the drumbeat of big and small stressors that marked their lives. That's how NPR put it. Geronimus says this: "What I've seen over the years of my research and lifetime is that the stressors that impact people of color are chronic and repeated through their whole life course, and in fact may even be at their height in the young adult through middle adult ages rather than in early life. And that increases a general health vulnerability, which is what weathering is." What we're weathering here is an onslaught of social justice lunacy with no foundation in reality. Let's get back to square one on this, okay? Down to the foundation, to the bedrock. What this amounts to is just one more way to create a class of victims, or enhance the victimhood of an already victimized class. Because leftism cannot survive without a victim class in order for them to be heroes. The victim class must exist in order for progressives to step in on their behalf. Otherwise, progressives have nothing to do but what is real and normal. And they can't do that because they have no answers in the real world for real world problems. So they have to create problems out of thin air, hence social justice, in order for them to be heroes. This applies in so many ways. Remember what I said just the other day about the middle class. The middle class is an inconvenience to the progressive, because the middle class stands on its own. The middle class doesn't expect a handout. The middle class doesn't expect to be helped. The middle class wants to take care of things on their own. The middle class stands up, gets up every day, goes to work, fights through things, learns how to improve, and improves. The middle class learns how to progress in their field of choice. The middle class succeeds where others fail, because their outlook on life is not the outlook of a victim. And that is extremely inconvenient for the progressives, because progressives need victims in order to justify their existence. Where there are no victims, there can be no progressive heroes running to their rescue. And this is one more example. From the woman, Brittany Cooper, the professor of women's and gender studies at Rutgers University, who told us that time was a racist construct invented by white people. Being on time was racist. She says that overweight black women are a victim class. I must say what I said before. If you overeat and sit on your backside and you don't exercise at all, you're creating your own issue and you are a victim of your own bad choices. That's the issue. You're not a victim. Only a victim of yourself. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Wrapping things up here. Final segment for a Friday, diving into the weekend. I've got a couple of stories. I'm going to try to hit both of them. First off, Wednesday night, Fox News' Tucker Carlson, citing published accounts, suggested the real reason Megyn Kelly was canned from her job over at NBC last year was because she called for an outside investigation into the network over internal claims of sexual misconduct and the suspect handling of allegations into Democrat mega donor Harvey Weinstein. Quote, early September, you, Kelly, on your show, on the air on NBC, called for an independent investigation into these allegations. That's what Carson said to Kelly, who appeared alongside him on Tucker Carlson Tonight. Carlson ran a clip of Kelly doing just that on September 2nd, 2018. Quote, there is a question about whether or not there should be an outside investigation or take a hard look at this, she said, referring to allegations of sexual misconduct aimed at former Today host Matt Lauer and apparent stonewalling on Weinstein, reporting of of then NBC journalist Ronan Farrow. Quote, to me, as a lawyer, it's just always better to just send it outside. And then people can have more faith in it. And if there's nothing to hide, you have no worries about it. That's what Kelly said. And Carlson told Kelly, people's jaws hung open when you said that. There have been a couple of published accounts that say you were fired from NBC a little more than a month later for saying that. And Kelly was ostensibly canned from NBC in October for discussing whether it's racist or not for people to darken their faces for Halloween costumes. You remember that, of course. She was talking about when she was young and she went as Diana Ross of Diana Ross as the Supremes to some sort of a Halloween gathering. And that was when she was young. She was a kid. And people thought, and they clutched their pearls and were falsely shocked. Carlson then pointed out that MSNBC host Chris Hayes similarly questioned NBC's handling of such allegations and reporting. Quote, he is saying essentially what you said, which is he doesn't trust the management of at NBC News. Given your experience, do you think he's in jeopardy for being fired? And she responded rather tellingly, no comment on that. I will say the question is open as to whether NBC put dollars ahead of decency. There needs to be an outside investigation into this company. They investigated themselves. That doesn't work. Fox News had an outside investigator. CBS News had an outside investigator. NPR, the NFL. This is how it's done. You get somebody on the outside who can be trusted. As outlined by Tiana Lowe earlier this week, it's become increasingly clear that Kelly was likely fired for questioning NBC management rather than the blackface comments in light of reporting from Farrow's new book, Catch and Kill. Lowe posted at the Washington Examiner saying, Ronan Farrow's explosive reporting on the lengths NBC went to shut down his investigation into Harvey Weinstein grants further credence to an unpalatable, sexist, and aberrant rationale for Kelly's firing. NBC wanted to silence Kelly's coverage of their former anchor, Matt Lauer. In the weeks before the blackface nothing burger, Kelly spent ample amounts of time on her talk show reporting on the numerous sexual assault and harassment allegations plaguing Lauer. Unlike many of her fellow daytime hosts, Kelly had covered the Me Too beat in scrupulous and, at times, necessarily unsavory detail, conducting explosive interviews with multiple Weinstein victims. When the Lauer story broke and his termination from NBC came shortly thereafter, Kelly covered it with the same righteous indignation. On live television, Kelly called on her own employers to allow an external team to investigate the network's handling of the entire Lauer affair. And she went so far as to interview one of Lauer's accusers on air. It is a massive gamble to criticize the ethics of your own employer on national television, but Kelly rightly made that bet, and NBC fired her for it. We can be more confident, thanks to new reporting by Farrow. So, here we have one more example of NBC News being untrustworthy, of NBC News covering itself when things look bad. This is NBC, the network, firing people who question them instead of saying, okay, well, we'll bring in an outside investigator and get to the bottom of this. Guys, let's hire somebody from outside and get this all out in the open and take care of the problem, because obviously there is a problem. Let's get it handled. Let's put this to bed. Let's do this definitively. But no, they did an internal investigation, and as Megyn Kelly says, that never works. Even if everything is honest and above board, the people outside will raise an eyebrow and say, yeah, they looked into it themselves. Right. And as a result of her questioning them, it's becoming more and more obvious. That's why she was fired. Now, I have seen some people who have posted online who have said that Megyn Kelly came crawling back to Fox News because she's been out of work. She clearly said during this interview that she has spent this time being a mom, that she left Fox News because her children were hitting an age where she really needed to be their mother. And she needed a more flexible schedule, something that would allow her the time to be mom. Now, she may be looking for a gig. I'll be honest with you. She's made so much money, she should have enough to live off of for the rest of her life. But right now, they've lost Shepard Smith. Even though Fox News has denied that they're looking at Megyn Kelly for anything, Megyn Kelly would be a good replacement for Shepard Smith. Just a thought. Just a couple of minutes left here, real quickly, and this story is even longer than the one we just dealt with, I think, but I'm going to try to dive into it. In the UK, the question is being asked, can unisex bathrooms lead to bladder infections for young girls? Because of how they're being implemented in the UK, at least one doctor thinks so. The Daily Mail reported over the weekend that young girls have become so intimidated by the prospect of using gender-neutral bathrooms that they're taking drastic steps to avoid using them, up to and including staying home from school. The report said parents and students had shared their apprehension about using the bathrooms, an increasingly commonplace thing in the UK. It's becoming so here as well, in spite of parental petition drives. The outlet reported, with a growing number of both primary and secondary schools installing unisex toilets, some girls are risking infections by refusing to urinate all day. Others are so fearful they've stopped drinking liquids at school. Girls on their periods have even said they're staying home from school because they're afraid of feeling period shame. Others say they simply didn't feel safe using the bathroom with boys. The Daily Mail reports the trend for single-sex toilets is driven by the wish to be more inclusive of children who identify as transgender and wish to use the same facilities as the opposite sex. But last night, doctors and politicians called on schools to halt the move towards unisex toilets to prevent any further harm to female pupils. One doctor told the Daily Mail the effects of the gender-neutral bathrooms go beyond just the psychological. According to Dr. Tessa Katz, holding it or not drinking during the day, if done regularly, could lead to infections of the urinary tract or bladder. The psychological effects of girls not feeling safe is enough to use mixed toilets is also concerning. Why is this important? There's a lot more to this. I suggest you grab the show notes today and read the rest of the article. Click the links and explore beyond just this one article coming from Western Journal. This is important because social justice demands that our society accommodate people above and beyond the importance of the accommodation. What I mean by that is that the number of transgender people in America is so tiny, the percentage is so tiny, that bending over backwards and changing everything for this tiny percentage doesn't make sense. I don't care how compassionate you are towards certain people. It just doesn't make sense. And as I've said before, and Dave and I have said on the Mark and Mac show in the past, if the goal is to be the opposite sex, you're going to dress that way, behave that way. Isn't the goal to be the opposite sex and use the appropriate restroom without letting anyone know you're the opposite sex? Why is the goal to let everybody know what you're up to, unless something is not quite right? Just food for thought for your weekend, but don't think about it too much. Unplug, enjoy your family, have fun, and come back in here Monday for the Monday edition of the Daily Perspective. God bless you. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Knock off now and take the next 2 days off. How's that?